Grant, we've already scared Evan off. He's not here. We have a new study for those who are visiting, starting in Genesis this morning. However, we probably won't spend a whole lot of time in Genesis other than just talking about it for a minute, about a review. I had said Wednesday night when Doug was finishing up his book Wednesday that we were going to cover 50 chapters this morning, and I told Grant that would give us about 45 seconds per chapter to read them together, so he said he hadn't brushed up on his speed reading enough to do that this morning. So we're not going to endure 50 chapters. It was announced that y'all could read the first seven chapters, which was another misunderstanding. I had actually told Ann, if everybody read seven chapters a day for the next 7 days, they'd get the whole book done, especially if they skipped a couple of genealogies, which everybody seems to do. And that didn't happen. It just, most everybody was told to read the first seven chapters, which is fine, because this week and next week we're going to get into Genesis 1 and 2 and study about creation. In the back there, there's a paper that Grant typed up that has a rough schedule. Hopefully we can adhere to it pretty well. And if you'll pick that up, if you haven't already, there's about, it's a breakdown. Most everybody's going to kind of, it'll be Evan and Grant and I splitting up our time from now through the middle of November, taking into account a gospel meeting and some breaks that each of us has planned. So we're going to try and steer as close to this as we can. We've allotted so many classes for different subjects, and we're going to kind of try and hit it by subject instead of just jumping around as much. So we'll go in the order that the book of Genesis is written, by story, I guess you would say, and each of us is going to take a portion of it. So this morning we're going to just talk about the general overview of Genesis, and then Wednesday, Lord willing, we'll get into the creation account and spend two or three lessons on creation in chapter 1 and 2. And then after that, Grant will switch over for about three lessons to temptation and the fall of man. And we'll move on through the subjects that way. So as you look at your schedules every week and see what we're studying in here, please kind of reference what you know we've gotten to, but also what our projection is, so that you can kind of read ahead and be informed before we start classes. And maybe that'll give everybody a little bit of insight to what we're studying instead of just showing up hoping that somebody will tell you something. The book of Genesis is one of five books written by who? Does anybody know? By Moses. Everybody knows that. And it is those five books. What are they called in the Septuagint? They're referred to as what? The Pentateuch. So the Pentateuch is a Greek word talking about those five, penta meaning five, and covers those five books: Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. The original word for Genesis that was in Hebrew was a word, and thankfully I didn't write it in Hebrew, but Bereshith, B-E-R-E-S-H-I-T-H, meaning the beginning. The Greek word Genesis means origin or source, and or you could say the beginning also, but it more has emphasis on the origin or the source of things. Of course, with creation, we think about the source of God being the source of everything, and so that defines that pretty well. But when we think about origin, as you think about what all is included in Genesis, we think about the Tower of Babel and the division of the world in that way, and the replanting of human beings all over the place. That's an origin. You think about the origin with Adam and Eve. You think about the origin of sin. You think about the origin of the relationships of different nations and people as they moved around the world, and the division of languages, all those things. And so Genesis is one big history book, as you know, and kind of gives us the beginning steps of the Bible, but not just the Bible, but of world history. Of course, it stands in conflict with a lot of things that the historians today and even in the past have tried to put down Genesis and many other books of the Bible in general. And I don't think it's ever been proven wrong. There's been lots of times when people thought it was proven wrong, and to their dismay, they usually backed it up. Of course, when we get into the creation account here in the next few lessons, we'll talk about, we'll compare that to the idea of evolution and the theory of evolution a little bit, but I would like to focus more on just the Word of God and what it teaches and the faith that it requires. But those are all wide open subjects to discuss as we go through that. So the book of Genesis gives us a broad overview of the beginning with some very specific details. And when I think about the details, I think about the genealogies, which we all like to skip when we start reading all those names. But it's unbelievably detailed, not just God's people and that thread of lineage that comes from, let's say, from Abraham to Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and that lineage, but there's the lineage of Esau and where all those peoples came from. And then you have the direction that you come from, like Ishmael. And so, you know, where did all those nations that we know of today come from? Well, you can look in Genesis and there's just these bloodlines that go in every direction. And so Moses, through his careful, and by the Spirit giving him the ability to understand all of that and to write a perfect record of it, breaks down where everybody came from and where how they were dispersed. And then, of course, you have the divisions of the world after Tower of Babel. And when everybody was pushed every direction, you see where different families went. And there's references back to the sons of Noah there. And so as we get into those subjects later on, I think I got stuck with that. I drew that straw on the Tower of Babel and divisions of the world. We'll get into that in a lot more detail later. In the talking about genealogies, in the book of Genesis, I was reading one thing that said there was 11 genealogies, but then I realized two of them, what they were calling genealogies, was more about creation and about the beginning of the world. And then just about Adam, but Adam really didn't have people before him. So I kind of cut those off and really identified just 9 genealogies specific to Adam and Noah. The sons of Noah are dealt with a little differently than Noah, again, separately, separate genealogy. And then Shem and Terah and Ishmael, Isaac, Esau, and Jacob. All those have specific nearly an entire chapter dedicated to a genealogy written about them. The book of Genesis covers creation, chapter 1 and 2. You have the fall of man, chapter 3. Later on, we see the judgment of the world in chapter 6 and 7, 8, 9, I believe, with Noah. You have the divisions of the world in chapter 10, 11. Then you see this introduction to Abraham immediately after the Tower of Babel story and the divisions of the world and a genealogy. You see this introduction to Abraham and to his family, to Terah, and them leaving Ur of the Chaldees. And then they're going down to Haran, and they establish themselves in Haran. And so then some promises are made to Abraham, and God starts this story that we'll spend a lot of time in our study in the next few months. With Abraham, and starts to build a chosen people and a chosen seed and a chosen pathway to bring about salvation. And so as we study through the book of Genesis, we're going to see this thread, and we're going to get bogged down in some details that are going to kind of pull us away from that. And so I kind of like to look at that generally this morning as a whole, and realize that God had to introduce this subject for us to be able to follow it through his chosen people. And sometimes when we're studying something like Isaiah or Ezekiel or something like that, we're so bogged down in the detail of God's people and their problems and their choices and whatever that we forget that these people were chosen and their by their father Abraham, and they were for a very specific purpose, and it was to bring about Christ and bring about salvation. And yet, the blessing of salvation was for everyone, for the whole world. It wasn't just for that people. And so while God had chosen them as a, you might say, a vehicle to bring about his plan and bring his plan to fruition, it wasn't that that they were the only people that would ever have contact with God. In fact, in the book of Genesis, we'll see other people who revere God and that are the priest of God. And you'll see other people that are faithful to God besides Abraham. Of course, Abraham, as we know from studying the New Testament and some arguments that are made there, predates his own people that would come after him, the Jewish people, and so the Israelites. So how was Abraham faithful to God? Abraham was faithful to God by his faith in God and not by the fact that he was born into a family, right? So God chose him because of his faithfulness to continue and to create a chosen people. And so he was faithful before there was a chosen people. And that was what a lot of the frustration that we see with Paul's letter to the Galatians and in Hebrews is that that people in that time, Christians and Judaizing people, were promoting that they had to go back to the law to be perfect and to be obedient to God. Well, how was Abraham faithful and obedient to God if he wasn't a Jew? He was the father of that family, the beginning of it, but it was his belief and his faith in God that made him righteous before God. And so if that was capable and possible for him to be that way, then it's possible for us to be faithful to God outside of the law also. And so as we see Genesis unfold, it's not just a history book of a lot of really neat stories. It's like many other books in the Bible. There's a huge purpose and an underlying foundation that we have to understand to be able to piece together the rest of the scriptures with it. And it really fills in a lot of blanks. which brings me to my next thing. Let's go to Romans chapter 15. Romans chapter 15 and verse 4. Y'all are familiar with this verse. It says, "For whatever things are written before are written for our learning, that we, through the patience and comfort of the Scripture, might have hope." As we study through the book of Genesis, we need to understand that as Christians today, as Gentiles, looking for hope and understanding and for salvation and how to be righteous, the things that were written before, the things that God established and has had relationships with other faithful people, and he recorded that, and people that were sinful and that weren't righteous, and the people that didn't revere his will, and the way he dealt with them, and the way he punished them, the decisions that people made, the mistakes that they made in the Old Testament, all those things were recorded for a purpose. And he says, whatever things are written before were written for our learning, so that we could understand what it means to be faithful to God. Not just to be a Christian, but to be faithful to God and to be in a right and righteous relationship with God. And so he says, through the patience and comfort of the Scriptures, it might have hope. It's as if the Scriptures exist there to coddle us and bring us along and to give us a kind of a anchor point through our lives and through our relationship and through our growth as a Christian and through our growth as a God-fearing person, so we can go back and reference that and understand this is what God did with these people. This is when they sinned, this is how God reacted. So when I sin, how is God going to react? And when I look at their faithfulness and the reaction of God and promoting them and blessing them because of their faithfulness, then I know that when I'm faithful, I can also be promoted and taken care of and provided for by God. It also teaches us about God's providential care. As we study through the book of Genesis, we will see over and over and over how God provided for his people and how he took care of those that were righteous. But not only that, how he used sinful people in his plan along the way, and he used their mistakes and their actions to bring about his purpose. And so the providence of God is on display all through the book of Genesis. as talking about providence, Genesis is going to bring us up to the point where we come into the book of Exodus and Deuteronomy. And so we're going to see us go all the way up through the life of Joseph by the end of Genesis. And at the end of Genesis, Joseph dies. We're going to read about his last words and his request. And the chapter right before that, we're going to talk about Jacob's last words and his focus on eternity. There's some messianic statements in there. And so even though these men didn't fully understand and comprehend God's plan eternally and how through their seed the world would be blessed, they didn't understand all of that. God had made promises to them, and by faith they understood those promises. And so as they rallied behind those promises in their faith, they were making statements that would push their people, their children, forward. And so as Joseph dies and they go into this 400-year time of captivity, and they spend in Egypt, and there's this silent period there. When Moses comes on the scene in Exodus and those promises start to be fulfilled and God chooses to pull them out and the time is right, what we see is the providence of God having taken a single promise that he gave to Abraham, that in his seed the whole world would be blessed, that he would make a great nation out of them. And how was he going to do that? It wasn't through Ishmael, it was through Isaac. And so then we see these stories, but they all collectively add up to this 400 years where over a million people are born and raised inside of captivity, but really in an incubation in Egypt, to where they came out as a whole nation. They start off as Abraham and Sarah and a promise that seemed like it was completely incapable of happening, and a miraculous birth after the time of women, the Bible says, and Isaac coming into the scene, to an entire nation coming out of Egypt, with the Egyptians giving them everything to get rid of them, giving them gold and animals and everything else. And so they come out a newborn rich nation on their way headed to Canaan to fulfill this promise. And so the providence of God through Genesis, if we just say Genesis, we won't see that completion of it. But I wanted to connect that in there, because while we're studying Genesis, everything we study about Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and their families and their interactions is what's pushing us towards Exodus and towards Canaan and towards the fulfillment of the promise. Of course, as we study all those things, we can make an unlimited amount of parallels between the promises of Abraham we can make parallels with the with the promises of Canaan and that promised land and looking towards a better place to live. And, you know, the same parallel that we can get from that is that we're looking for an eternal home. There's things like when Abraham went to sacrifice his son, which we've talked about recently, and the parallel between that and God sacrificing his only son. There's a tremendous amount of parallels throughout Genesis that are setting a platform and a stage and a framework for the rest of the Bible, that we would do ourselves a great service if we could wrap our minds around every one of those parallels and every one of those things and really capture the essence of the not just the literature, not just the story, but the entire depth of the story and how it relates to the rest of the Bible. And so when we're studying other things in the New Testament, it's not hard to understand why we got to where we're at and how we got there. Of course, Genesis seems like one of those, to me, when I was studying through this again, I was thinking this seems like one of those books that you study in the kids' Bible classes. You know, well, why are we studying Genesis here in the adults? Or don't we all know these stories? Haven't we all studied about Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, you know, Potiphar's wife and all the different stories? Well, there's a tremendous amount of stories there. But we teach them to our children because we're trying to build them those principles and those framework. But so we need to be reminded of those things ourselves. If you will, turn over to Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 22, and then I want to read verse 39. In verse 22 of chapter 10, it says, "Let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith, And then in verse 39, but we are not of those who draw back to perdition, but those who believe in the saving of the soul. When we think about what it means to draw near, we want to draw near to God, to know God. But we want to draw near with a true heart, he says, in full assurance of faith. Christians must live by faith. We have to pursue righteousness in faith. We have to pursue God in faith. We have to trust God by faith. And we have to understand what he says and take action in our lives, not just hear it, but actually do it. And by that, we live by faith. How did all of these people in Genesis live? They lived by faith. Now, some of them failed in their faith from time to time, and we're going to study about that. You think about the mistakes that Abraham made as he grew in his faith with the situation in Egypt, for instance, with his wife and stepsister, I guess. That whole situation was for lack of faith. His lack of faith in where the promise was going to be fulfilled through a son with his own wife and taking Hagar, his wife's handmaid, that was a lack of faith. These things, you see people grow and you see their shortcomings, but ultimately they land in Hebrews chapter 11 as people of faith, and it was accounted to them as for righteousness, as it says in Galatians. Look over there in verse 39 with me again. It says, but we are not those who draw back to perdition, but of those who believe in saving the soul. So we want to draw near, not draw back. We want to live by faith, not by sight or by things that are easy to understand or by just, you know, I have a guarantee here, but I can see it and I have my hands on it, so I believe it. These people didn't have an eternal understanding of God's promises and God's fulfillment, and yet they had faith in God because of the works that they had seen, because of the things how God had worked in their life. But by faith, when God told Abraham to get up and leave his father's house and go to another place he didn't know, Abraham did it, and said it was accounted to him for righteousness. So we're not to draw back from those things, draw back into sin, draw back to a life that's comfortable, but to move forward in faith in those things that God wants us to do. So in chapter 11 here of Hebrews, in verse 1, it says he defines faith. If we're to live by faith as Christians, then what is faith? He says, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders obtained a good testimony. The elders being, as we find out real quickly, the elders being those in Genesis and some beyond that in Exodus and in the rest of the Old Testament. And the prophets and different ones that lived by faith. But over half of the chapter 11 is about the people, the patriarchs in the beginning in Genesis and how they lived. It says, for by it, by faith, the elders obtained a good testimony. So as we study through Genesis, if we want to have a good testimony with God, we can learn something from them in how they lived and how they reacted with God. In verse 3, it says, by faith we understand that the worlds are framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. So things outside of our comprehension were made so that we could see them and live in them. Creation, which we're going to study in Genesis 1 and 2. And these things were framed in the world. It says, but we have to believe that by faith, is what the writer says here. In verse 4, by faith Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained a witness that he was righteous. In verse 5, by faith Enoch was taken away so that when he did not see death and was not found because God had taken him, for before he was taken, he had this testimony that he pleased God. In verse 6, but without faith it is impossible to please him, for he who comes to God must believe that he is and that he is the rewarder of those who diligently seek him. At this time, when these men were following and serving God, they didn't have Christ on the cross to look forward to. They understood that God was their salvation and that God was providing for them and that his care was there and that they had faith in God to take care of them and that there was an eternal home to look forward to and that they were looking for a better place and that they were just sojourners here in this place that they were at. But by faith, they were trying to seek God and put him first. Enoch, so much so that he was taken from this world and didn't see death. And it says that his testimony when he was taken was that he pleased God. It is impossible for them, and it's impossible for us to please God without faith. In verse 7, by faith Noah, being divinely warned of things yet not seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. Did Noah sit on a judgment seat and drop the gavel and say, y'all are all condemned? His condemnation was because it was in direct opposition to the way the world acted. They didn't have faith. They weren't looking and seeking and gaining assurance in God and in his principles. In fact, they were going as far the other direction as they could. And so by him acting in faith and growing in stature before God as a righteous man and presenting himself as a righteous person, God blessed him with the opportunity to build an ark and save his family. And by doing that, by doing what God asked for, he stood as a symbol of judgment against the rest of the world. God's judgment against the rest of the world. But it wasn't Noah who actually judged them, but he gave them the opportunity over a 100-year period to be able to come to God and to understand who God was. And so Noah, by faith, being divinely warned, did what God told him and was found faithful. Then back to Abraham in verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents of Isaac and Jacob, and heirs with him the same promise. Have you ever thought about the fact that Abraham was in Canaan? It wasn't a place he was going to go. God said, you're going to inherit this. He said, look every direction. This is what you're going to inherit. To me, in my simple mind, I said, well, Lord, then I'm going to go over here and build me a city, and I'm going to build me another city over there, and I'm going to go ahead and build me a wall and a fence, and this will be my country. But that's not what God promised him. He said, it's going to happen. It will happen. And in due time, it's going to happen. You're going to have a son, and all this will come to fruition. But he didn't have evidence of it right now. He had to take it on the value of God said it would happen, and so I have faith to have it. It never happened in Abraham's lifetime. He didn't receive all that blessing. He didn't receive the fulfillment of it. And so this was a promise that was made to Abraham that would then be passed on to his sons and his son's son and his son's sons after that. And eventually, hundreds of years later, they would come back and fight for that land and take it back over. And so then that promise would be fulfilled. It says, he obeyed, he left, he stayed, he went to Canaan, he settled in that, and he sojourned. Just basically in tents, moving around, doing what God said. In verse 10, he says, for he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. He didn't need that physical place to be at peace with God, to understand who God was, and to understand what kind of faith he had to have in God. He was willing to sojourn here because he was looking for something way, way better. We as Christians, as we read through Genesis, we need to be reminded of those things as we study these stories. What kind of character did Abraham have? What kind of character did he pass on to his sons, to Isaac and Jacob? And what was passed on to Joseph? And what did they look forward to? They weren't looking for that physical rest. They were looking for the eternal rest and an eternal place. And they had a relationship with God, and they wanted to be with God and to know God and to be with him for eternity. Here in verse 11, it says, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. When you go back in the Genesis account of that story where that promise was made, and she said, it says she laughed in herself, and the angel said, why do you laugh? She said, oh, I didn't laugh. And a lot of times that's where we end that story, and we're like, well, she didn't have faith. But here it says she had faith that he was faithful to that promise that he had promised. And so she lands here with Abraham, and the two of them together had faith in that God would fulfill that promise. Therefore, from one man, verse 12, and him as good as dead were born as many as the stars of the sky, multitude innumerable as the sand which is in the seashore. By faith, Abraham acted. He did what he should do. He went through a tremendous amount of trials. He was put up. When we'll see some of his mistakes that he made, the things that he did, and he still overcame, and he was blessed for it. Verse 13, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them from afar, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims of the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. These folks, all, every one of them, as we go through this, were not trying to stay here. They weren't trying to make a utopia. They weren't creating God's people as a chosen nation to have a perfect place on earth. It was about having the right relationship with God, which is what we as Christians are seeking. And so as we today study those things that were written before for us on our learning, this is what we want to glean from it. In verse 14, in verse 15, and truly if they had called to mind that country which they had come out of, they would have had the opportunity to return. Any one of these people could have just gone home and said, you know what, I'm just going to go back to Ur of the Chaldees, or I'm going to stay in Iran. Or, you know, when Isaac sent his servant back to find, when Isaac sent somebody back to find a husband, oh, I'm sorry, Abraham sent back to find a wife for Isaac. And so that was by faith. They could have just sent his son back there, but he told the servant, don't let my son go back there. That's not what God promised. So by faith, he followed through with his promise and said, look, he learned from his mistake with Hagar and said, God's made a promise. He's going to fulfill it. And one way or the other, he promised that this is the land where we're going to be. So don't send my son back here. All of these things that we're going to study through the book of Genesis all come together with this statement right here. He says they could have gone back to their land. They could have gone and just served their own interests, developed their own family, and grew how they wanted to, and ignored God's providence and God's request and God's instruction. And God would have allowed them to make that choice. But they didn't. By faith, they followed God and served God. In verse 16, but now they desire better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. So God's prepared a better place for them. He's prepared a better place for all those that seek him and put him first and that look forward to him and that are trying to serve him in faith. In verse 17, by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he received the promises, offered up this his only begotten son. I made a reference about that earlier. That's one of the stories that we're going to spend a little time on, is that sacrifice and that willingness to show his service and faith in God, no matter what the cost. As Christians, what are we willing to give up? What are we willing to sacrifice? What are we willing to do to show our faith and our contentment in God's promises? In verse 19, concluding that God would be able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense, by faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. So when Isaac extended Esau's blessing to Jacob and then gave a different blessing to Esau, he did it by faith. Sometimes we don't think about that story when we're reading through that story that Isaac gave those blessings by faith. We just see this seemingly obstinate father saying, nope, that blessing's gone and it's done. But that blessing that he gave ultimately to Jacob was one that was, you might say, directed by God. It was intentional. It had to do with the eternal promise and the covenant relationship that was made to his father. And so he was promoting that same promise that was given to Abraham, and it was running through Isaac. Remember the statement that God made to those that were with him when they met Abraham, and they were going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, and he turned back towards one of the others, and he said, should we withhold from Abraham, this chosen one, what I'm going to do to Sodom, because Lot's there? And he says, because I know that he's going to tell his sons, who are going to tell his sons and multiple generations, he's a faithful man. And so God even points out to the others that were with him that he was faithful, that Abraham was faithful. And why he considered him faithful wasn't just because he believed and he was righteous, but because he knew he would pass it on. Isaac had received Abraham's instruction. He had received understanding of what the promises and the covenant was, and was so convinced of it himself that he had faith in it, that he was willing to pass it on to his son and to convey that in a very intimate way, and to exclude Esau at that point from it And so there was no more blessing to give to Esau, is what he told Esau. He said, that's it. That's what I have to give, because that's what I've been commanded to do. And so you see this relationship from Abraham through Isaac and Jacob and then on to Joseph, and the promises and the willingness to serve God. All of this is by faith, and all of it is because of their pursuit for righteousness and pursuit for a heavenly home and a place to be. When you get down there to the next verse, 21, by faith Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of his sons, Joseph, the sons of Joseph, and worshiped, leaning on the top of his staff. By faith Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instruction concerning his bones. Seems funny that one of them gives the instruction about the departure, and the other one talks about the bones, but it's really about the same subject. There again, Abraham said, I was given a promise. Isaac said, I was given a promise by my father and by God. I have faith in it. So Jacob blesses Joseph's sons, and he says, remember, we're leaving this place. I don't care how great Egypt is. It doesn't matter how rich we are here. It doesn't matter. The relationships at the time, they had a good relationship with Egypt. They weren't in bondage. They were just there among them. And he says, look, we're supposed to be in Canaan. Don't forget to leave and fulfill those promises. And then Joseph, believing and having faith in his father's words, says, don't forget to and take my bones, because this is not where I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to be somewhere else. As Christians, we're supposed to be somewhere else. We're supposed to be looking for an eternal home. This is not our end destination. And so as we study through Genesis, I hope this helps us get a kind of a larger picture of our interest in each of these particular studies and subjects, and an overview. Is there any comments or questions? I'm sorry, I just talked for 30 minutes straight and we didn't even read anything in Genesis. I think our time is up. We got right on the clock there.